Looking around the room, it looks like this is an assembly of some of our core regulars. Anybody here that's really new? Welcome. Anyone else? Well, your friend is new. You're not new. You're new with the garland? Where are you from? Okay, welcome. I'm visiting too. I'm from up north, that's why I got my jacket on. And someone else had their hand up? New? No? Kind of new? No, undecided. Okay. Okay. Well, our temple president, Nityananda, had to take care of some house guests and go somewhere with them, so he's not here. But he gave me a topic that he'd like me to discuss, at least touch on a particular topic. So I'd like to do that. And especially for our new persons, and reminder for everyone else, the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam are companion literatures. Bhagavad Gita? Yes. Bhagavad Gita, of course, right? So, Bhagavad Gita. In the early part of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says something that, in an informal way, I've kind of done informal surveys and found that it's true. I'm no surprise. But what Krishna says in second chapter of Bhagavad Gita is, most people think that the purpose of spiritual teachings or religion, purpose of scripture, is A, B, and C. To lead a good life, pious life, virtuous life, and, or so that you will gain pious credits, pious merit, and in this life you will prosper. And number three, after this life you go to the good place. And it's not just this religion, that religion, it's the principle. You live a life that's according to codes of the teachings that you follow, and that's a good life. And you should lead a good life because it's good to lead a good life. And when you lead a good life that's according to codes that are given from spiritual teachings, you earn pious credit, punya, or kriti. And then there's fruits of that piety, and the fruits of that piety enable you to prosper in this life and in the next, in heaven. Common. Krishna says that's not the purpose of Bhagavad Gita. It's not the purpose, not the higher purpose of Dharma. And the higher purpose of Dharma, he indicates in another section of Bhagavad Gita, is not to go to the good place or avoid going to the bad place. It's not going to heaven or avoiding going to hell by pious activity and avoiding sinful activity. It's breaking the cycle of the bondage of birth and death. And the bondage of birth and death is due to desiring to be the enjoyer of this temporary world. Desiring to be the enjoyer of the fruits of your work, even pious work. So there's Bhagavad Gita lesson. There's the modes of nature. ignorance, passion, and goodness in a mixture. Goodness leads up. Heaven. Passion keeps us in Dallas, in the material world, the world of fruitive activity. And ignorance, darkness, violence, sin, intoxication, madness leads down to the lower regions of existence. Urdhvam gacchanti sattvastha, madhye tishtanti rajasa, adho gacchanti tamasa. But Bhagavad Gita is not just teaching go for the good place and avoid the bad place. It's teaching break the cycle because the cycle, saying it again, it's caused by attachment. We'll keep it simple. Attachment to the temporary. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam chajat ante kalevaram. For those of you that are new, Sanskrit doesn't mean so much. But it's Krishna's teaching. Whatever your mind is fixed on, whatever you're absorbed in thought at the time of death, that's the mind will carry you to that place. That's the next birth you're going to take, where the mind is absorbed. And if the mind is absorbed in the temporary, you're going to keep taking birth in the temporary. Repeated birth and death. No question. It's a good question. How do you free the mind from absorption in the temporary? Because, gee whiz, any direction you look in, there's temporary. Look up, look down, look sideways, left, right, behind you, beneath you. Matter is temporary. And the configuration of matter is always changing. Have you noticed? One thing is permanent about matter. It's always changing. Always changing. Maybe slowly. It's always changing. Sometimes really fast. But it's always changing. Nishtata, it's unsteady. And you get attached to the unsteady, and you have to move with the unsteady birth after birth. So the advocacy of Bhagavad Gita has become attached to the permanent. Nasate vijate bhavo no bhavo vijate sataha. Ubayor upadrishno antas tvaniyos tatvadarshi bihi. For those who like Bhagavad Gita verses. The tattva darshi, the seer of truth, doesn't get so involved in the temporary. They're really interested in the permanent. I mean, literally, eternal. Sat. Sat means eternal. Sat means that which exists. It's substance. It exists. And asad is temporary. Now you see it, now you don't. It's insubstantial. There's no substance. It looks like substantial. Here I'm seated on this nice seat. It's been here since I started visiting the Dallas Temple. It's even got a nice little rip in the back that you can't see because it's really old. It needs to be recovered. Needs some repair. But there was a time when this seat didn't exist, and there's going to be a time when it doesn't exist. Now you see it. Now you don't. Asasat. So I'm using it in Krishna's service, but I know very well it's asat. So how do you be attached to sat, or that which is substantial? The basis and support of all that is eternal, that's Krishna. Now, how do I move through this world of the temporary, maintaining attachment to the eternal? That's a challenge, right? That's yoga. Yoga means linking with that eternal, that source of everything. And the codes of the Vedas are not simply go to the good place and avoid the bad place. It's how to, by living a good life, living a virtuous life, how to connect with the eternal. It's a nice metaphor. It's very simple. You want a fire. Supposing you have some wet wood and you want a fire. Got to make the wet wood dry before it will ignite. And when the wet wood becomes dry and then you put it in the fire, it'll burn. You put the wet wood in a fire and just make a lot of smoke till it becomes dry, and then it can burn. To make it dry. That's what the life of goodness is, the life of virtue is, the life of proper conduct. Be truthful. Mode of goodness. Don't lie. Don't steal. You know, the Ten Commandments. It's all spiritual teachings have some kind of do's and do nots, but that's not the essence. The essence is the essence. The essence is connect with the eternal. Connect with Sat. Therefore, now I want to go to the graduate study text. That's this one, Srimad Bhagavatam. And it says, I'll say it in Sanskrit and then I'll explain it. Dharmasya hi apavargasya nartotayo pakalpate. We'll start with that first one. The purpose of theistic conduct or good conduct or virtuous conduct, the purpose of it is ultimate liberation. Never should it be performed for gaining something temporary, like objects of sense gratification, like piety so I can get some pious merit, so I can get some good stuff. I can prosper in this life and be an enjoyer of a good life. Don't perform theistic, don't perform good conduct for that reason. Don't perform that good conduct because I was having this discussion 2 days ago with somebody who is describing, we were discussing mode of goodness happiness. Mode of goodness happiness is, for example, when you go out of your way to do something for someone else, an act of kindness for someone else, you feel something. You feel a happiness. We all know that feeling. Even if the person doesn't express any gratitude, like thank you or gee, that was nice, we just feel some happiness doing something for others, whether they're in a needful condition or not. Just like coming from Florida to Dallas, there was this really old couple. They had 20 minutes to connect their flight from Dallas to the, wherever the next place they were going. The man was in total anxiety. He got up even before the plane got to the jetway, and he was like with his bag, I've got only 20 minutes to catch my flight. So there were some motor goodness people in the rows in front of him and said, we'll sit down. You can go to the front, but you have to wait till the plane stops. You can't like stand up till the plane stops. So the people that did that, you know, somebody else showed him, they got his, this is your flight, it's 10 minutes delayed, you have a little more time. You know, so they felt good, I'm sure. Anyway. But that's about me. So, like, what do I feel? I get some happiness doing some act of charity. We shouldn't do acts of charity because I feel good. Or the other person who's in need feels good. I mean, you may feel good and they may feel good, and that's not, you don't turn your feelings off. You don't become a stone. But the purpose, there's a higher purpose. The Vedas, Bhagavad Gita teaches us, what's that higher purpose? Apavarga, ultimate liberation. I'm not a Sanskrit scholar, but I've heard Prabhupada many, many times explain Pavarga. Some of you know Sanskrit. Pabha, babha, ma. It just goes through. It's how you learn the Sanskrit alphabet. One of the syllables. Without going into it because of this audience, it's material existence. Hard labor, foam at the mouth, fear, finally death. Material activity. It doesn't hold the promise of enjoyment that's permanent that we want. It's the happiness is here and gone, and then comes death and fear in between, fear of death. So apavarga is where that you transcend that ultimate liberation. I'll say it again. Dharma or duty should be done for the purpose of ultimate liberation, connecting with Sat, connecting with Krishna. Not for the purpose of achieving something that can be utilized for material enjoyment, sense gratification. Then the other part is, okay, well, supposing that wasn't my interest, my plan, my objective, my goal, but look, here comes this prosperity. I guess God wants me to enjoy. That's what my mom and dad taught me. I didn't buy it. God wants you to enjoy. I mean, not like he wants us to be unhappy, but their sense, the definition of enjoyment was not in terms of his happiness. Love, which is what the Bhagavatam teaches and Bhagavad Gita teaches, bhakti, means service with love. So supposing some prosperity does come, you've lived a good life, pious life, virtuous life, here come some fruits of that piety and that virtue. Don't be the enjoyer of those things, rather those things should be used in the service of the Supreme, the source of those things. Nartasya dharmaikantasya kamo labhaya hi smritaha. Don't use them for kama, for sense enjoyment. Wealth, beauty, good education, some opulence of this world that comes from piety. Don't become the enjoyer in a materialistic way. Even if you didn't try for it, when it comes, don't use it in a materialistic way. I've been spending time, like, really absorption in the teachings of Prahlad. This is maybe 201 for some of you. But Prahlad teaches that the way of love, where there's not even the hint of an interest in achieving something temporary for enjoyment purposes. If it comes, it comes. If it doesn't come, it doesn't come. There's only one thing that such a person like Prahlad wants, and that's the opportunity to serve the beloved. And that's it. And if the beloved says, turn left, it's turn left. The beloved says, turn right, it's turn right. You're the master, I'm the servant, and there's nothing else between us. And there he is embracing Lord Nrisingadeva, and Lord Nrisingadeva is embracing him. So that's the exchange of love, but it's in the mood of the loving servant and the supreme master. Lord Nrisingadeva said, you please me so much. You've offered very beautiful prayers. I'm the giver of any benediction for all living entities. Just say whatever it is that you want, and it's yours. Prahlad said, please don't tempt me. I see this as an obstacle. A good master doesn't give material things to their servant. And the servant doesn't appeal for material things from their master. They just want the opportunity to serve their master. So please don't ask me. If you want to give a benediction, here's one. Take from the core of my heart all hankering for materialistic enjoyment. Leave only this loving disposition towards you. That would be a wonderful benediction. Now, how do you get there? That sounds nice, euphemistically. Wow. Now, fasten your seatbelt. How are you going to get there? Well, the Srimad Bhagavatam tells us how to get there. There's this whole nice section. I encourage you all to read it. And not just once, but again and again, so it goes inside and it's how you live your life. I'm just going to make reference to two, but they're both speaking about two how you get there messages. They're both in reference to regularly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and that's the topic that Nityananda Prabhu asked me to speak about. So all this is a preamble to speak about what he wanted me to speak about. Srinvatasvakata Krishna Punyashravana Kirtana Vidyantokstoya Bhadrani Vidhunoti Saritsatam. And then the next one. But Punya means piety. And the act of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam regularly promotes spiritual piety. There's three kinds of piety. Did you know that there's three kinds of piety? Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains. There's piety that increases material prosperity. There's piety that detaches one from the temporary world and helps one enter into the it's all one with the Supreme Consciousness. And there's a spiritual piety that connects one with Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the classic example of material piety. We don't know so much about that here in America, but digging wells and planting trees by the side of the road. That's a Vedic. Because people walked along the road and planting trees, then people could be in the shade of those trees. It was more comfortable. Plant trees along the side of the road. Piety. For other people, for generations to come. Or dig wells so they have water. Piety. You know, ours is feeding the poor and helping little old ladies across the street and those kinds of things. Do good acts. Acts of charity and compassion for others. And increases material prosperity. There's the Vedic example of study of Vedanta Sutra that promotes detachment from being the enjoyer of the temporary and attachment to Brahman. And then there's spiritual piety. Taking Krishna Prasadam, distributing Krishna Prasadam, hearing the holy name. We just had a program midday out there in the suburbs somewhere. I don't even know where we were. And one gentleman has a little project of taking care of cows. And then he was asking, in addition to taking care of the cows, is there some way of benefiting the cows spiritually, like playing the recording of the Maha Mantra? Fantastic. You know, don't expect them to chant, but at least they can hear. If you get them to chant and dance, I mean, my God, that's great. But just by hearing, spiritual well-being is generated. I'll share something quickly. Somebody sent me this little video clip. I happened to have been sitting in the audience. It was Prabhupada speaking at the Henry Street Brooklyn Temple. Gosh, it must have been something like 1971 or 72. Something like that. 72, 73. Prabhupada was explaining how the Hare Krishna movement began. And very short, but he was saying, in the beginning, there was just this Maha Mantra. And people would hear the Maha Mantra, and they may understand, they may not understand. They may appreciate, they may not appreciate. But he moved his hand in the air. But it was generating auspiciousness. And that's how it began. He said, I didn't even have a drum. I just had kartals. We didn't have prasadam distribution at that in the early stage. We just had Maha Mantra, and it created auspiciousness in a dark place. Then he chuckled and said, and then came dancing. Brahmananda, he looked around the room and said, those of you that may remember Brahmananda and Achyutananda, they would dance. And that's how it all began. Just creating auspiciousness through this Maha Mantra. Then gradually so many things, books and temples and, you know, Radha Kalachanji and, you know, look at this beautifully decorated temple. But in the beginning, it wasn't any of that. How it began is creating auspiciousness. So the sound vibration, just as the sound vibration of Srimad Bhagavatam, it creates auspiciousness. Punya, Shravana Kirtana. Shravana, hearing. Kirtana, vibrating. Vibrating what? Krishna Katha. Shrinvata Sva Katha Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana. And then what happens? Ridyantak Stoya Bhadrani. From the heart, the Abhadras are eliminated or diminished. On the altar here we have Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra. Bhadra means auspicious. Subhadra means very auspicious, and Abhadra is inauspicious. And in the heart, there's inauspicious things. And regularly, just like the chanting of Hare Krishna created auspiciousness, Prabhupada was explaining, he's also explaining in Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam regularly also creates that auspiciousness. Punya Shravana Kirtana Vidyantak Stoya Bhadrani. The inauspicious things Vidhunoti. Cleansed. Suhrit Satam. And one becomes situated in goodness. Wow. I mean, I don't have to keep struggling. It's a struggle. Krishna confirms it, and our experience confirms it. Dealing with the material energy, it's a struggle. Daivihi esha gunamayi mamamaya duratyaya duratyaya. Very difficult struggle. But there's an alternative. What's that? No struggle? Mam evaye prapadyante. If you take shelter of Krishna, mayam etam tarantite, you can easily cross beyond the struggle. Wow. So how do you surrender to Krishna? You hear about him, starting with that. Srinvatasvakata Krishna. That's the teaching. That's how you get there. I said the Bhagavatam teaches how you get there. It teaches how to get there. Then, nashtaprayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavata. Nityam bhagavata sevaya. We all know the word seva. Seva means service. A service to the Bhagavatam is hearing it. Of course, hearing it from the right source, hearing it from a qualified Bhagavata. The Prabhupada explains. Just like Krishna is the speaker of Bhagavad Gita, right? It doesn't say Sri Krishna Uvacha, it says Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, because he's Bhagavan. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. And Bhagavata means in relation to Bhagavan. So the book is in relation to Bhagavan. The book is the literary form of Krishna, Bhagavata, the book Bhagavata. And then there's the person who vibrates the book Bhagavata. That's the person, Bhagavata, the speaker. Like Shukadeva Goswami was the speaker of Bhagavatam, and then following him, Suta Goswami spoke, and so forth. In our line of disciplic succession, one hears Srinvata Swakata, Krishna. That's our process. We hear, we vibrate in this line of disciplic succession. And the sound vibration is pure. And what happens when you contact something that's pure? You become pure. You become purified. Very simple. If you're cold and you stand near a fire, what happens? Get warm. Because fires are warm. If you want to become pure, you come in contact with that which is pure and you become purified. And that sound vibration is pure. Even I may be impure, or the whatever person may be impure, the sound vibration is pure. I'll say two other little things, and I've got till 6:15, but I want to see if this is a question-answer type of audience or not. So, two scientific things. Because if science says it's got to be true, right? During the summer, somebody sent to me the result of some research from Scientific American, or whatever it's called, a journal, research of a neurologist from Spain who, during his professional life, he had a side interest over there in Sanskrit. Then he studied Sanskrit and he learned Sanskrit and he could translate and speak and became proficient in Sanskrit along with being a neurologist. Then he retired from being a neurologist and he went to India. And he took his MRI and CAT scan technology stuff. And he studied, he examined people that chant Sanskrit for 3 or 4 hours a day to see what happened. Because there's lots of studies that exist what happens with alpha waves and gamma waves and brain waves, you know, the soft stuff. But does the hardware change? And the answer is yes. And two specific features of hardware change were these. Memory increases 3 to 4 times compared to those who don't. So I say this a lot in colleges. You want to become a good student? Do some Sanskrit mantra chanting. Because you'll have a better memory and you'll do better in your exams. Now that's like a carrot, a material carrot. But those persons that chant Sanskrit mantras or verses for 3 to 4 hours. They are experiencing something else besides a carrot. They're experiencing connection with transcendence. Because that's where the Vedas come from that realm that's beyond the temporary. And into this realm that's temporary, and you connect that with that realm through that sound. And the hardware changes. You know, in Kali Yuga, memory becomes less. You've heard that before, right? That's why Vyas wrote the Vedas down, because people forget. Chant Sanskrit mantras, or chant Sanskrit, and your memory will become stronger. You'll be forget less. You remember more. And the other is, the awareness lobes in the back of the brain, as opposed to the motor lobes in the front, they were far more developed. Like, you know, aware persons. So they could be more present, you know, in the moment, as they say these days. Mindful of the moment. Because of that. Compared to others that don't. And this other one, I haven't read it. This is another, hey, the scientists say so, it's got to be, right? So here's one that someone sent me a little piece of some information. There's a man in Andhra Pradesh. Those of you from India, you know where Andhra Pradesh is. He speaks it in Telugu, but he's a researcher that did this study where there's this really thin film, and he puts powder on a thin film, and then he projects sound towards that film with some powder on it, and watches what happens with the alignment or the arrangement of the powder. You know about this one? Do you know what this is called? Sona something? Sonomatic. Sonomatic. Cymatic. Okay, so some of you know about it. I just heard about it, like, less than a week ago. And something like this. When it's material sound, it's all skewed and scattered and, you know, wild. And the Sanskrit sounds form the Sanskrit letters with the powder. Like, for example, someone really skilled in chanting Om chants Om. And the powder forms the syllable Om. Sound has form. Spiritual sound has form. We have our nice verse about chanting. Abhinna tvam nama namina. We say that the name of Krishna and the object Krishna, nama and nami, those are Sanskrit, the name and the object named, they're non-different. Abhinna. Abhinna tvam nama nami. Here's a scientific experiment that, hey, science says, so it's got to be true. Now, I haven't seen the experiment. But some of you apparently know more about it than a little bit that I know. And sounds pretty cool to me. Properly pronounced, now, there's a big factor, and that is the Krishna factor. Krishna knows. When we're calling Krishna's name, we may not, according to Sanskrit rule, pronounce Krishna's name exactly. I go to China, and I'm sure they don't chant Krishna's name the way they chant Krishna's name in Vrindavan. Or in South America, you know, the Krishna. Anyway, culturally, they may not pronounce precisely, but Krishna knows. When you call him from your heart, Krishna knows, and he responds, because that's the Krishna factor. Spiritual sound is very powerful. So recommended, this is the punchline, recommended regularly chant Maha Mantra, hear and chant in kirtan and in your home, on your mantra beads every day with attention and intention. Intention means you connect with the person through that sound. And Srimad Bhagavatam, regularly. Regularly means Nityam Bhagavata. Nityam literally means eternally. Prabhupada very kindly, generously says, regularly. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. And you'll experience, you'll feel something. You know, one way to do the experiment is don't do it to see if you get those feelings. Do it negative. But do it positive. It works. And don't do it regularly, and then you're in this unsteady. Sometimes. I will say one other thing, and then we'll open for a discussion. Some of you may know, some of you may not know, in Mayapur, the world headquarters for ISKCON, every other year over the past some number of years, there have been an international leadership sangha. Everything has to have an acronym these days, so it's called ILS. International Leadership Sangha means presidents and other group leaders and congregation leaders and all kinds of leaders from all over the world come together in Mayapur. Something like, I'm not sure the number, 1,500 to 2,000 people from all over the world, all colors and cultures and languages. And some of us were invited to share what leaders need to know. Those who are leaders today, what's going to help you carry on ISKCON beyond the present set of leaders? Meaning when the Prabhupada disciples wave goodbye and all of you are left to lead the society going into the future, what's really important for you to know? That some persons are followers and some persons are leaders, and these were leaders. I'm sure there's leaders that didn't attend that, but that's who the conference was for. I chose to speak about the same topic that Nityananda Prabhu asked me to speak about to all of you, and that is, we just recently finished observing ISKCON 50. Yay! ISKCON been around for 50 years. Now, some of us old timers won't be around for ISKCON 100 because we'll be kaput. But some of you will be. At least you'll have the opportunity. But so this organizational development committee of the GBC spent some time going over a very comprehensive study of religious organizations that endured for 100 years and more and those that didn't, and what made the difference. Short 3-year study in 3 seconds. reading the writings of the scripture. Those that did it endured. Those that didn't expired. So I'll say it positively. Then I'll say it negatively. Positively. If you want to help ensure that ISKCON will celebrate ISKCON 100, please, devotees, regularly, daily, read Prabhupada's books. Don't wait for the learned people to read Prabhupada's book, then you need to go ask them what's in the books. Read the books. I'll say it negatively. If you want, if there's one thing you can do that will ensure it will not experience ISKCON 100, is don't read Prabhupada's books regularly. Wait for somebody else to read Prabhupada's books regularly. Say it positively. Much nicer. It's not just the institution. It's not an institutional appeal. It's the wholesomeness of a society that's going down due to the influence of the lower modes of nature. If you want to do your very best thing, the very best thing must include to help ensure it doesn't just continuously spiral like a whirlpool down and down and down and down, gone. One thing that must be there is regularly read Prabhupada's book. Whatever else you do with your life, some people are this and some people are that, by their psychophysical nature, fine. Act according to your psychophysical nature. Put this core inside. So it'll spiritualize your core. It'll spiritualize whatever you do. Mahamantra. And regularly read Srila Prabhupada's books. You'll benefit, and your life will be of the best benefit to others, whoever's close to, whoever comes in contact with you. You know, on a daily basis or a remote basis. You carry some spiritual Shakti, power, just from this. It's true. Okay, so I'm going to see if there's any discussion or comments. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much for your talk. Really enjoyed it. A couple of weeks ago, if I remember correctly, you were giving a talk about Hiranyakashipu's fear.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest points that you kept on emphasizing was whenever Hiranyakashipu used to ask, okay, what to Prahlad, what was the most significant or useful thing you learned today? He said, oh, I learned devotion to Vishnu. But in the end of the talk, you mentioned that when the two gurus of their school left, Prahlad Maharaj then instructed his other classmates, but I don't remember clearly if you completed the thought or not about whether then they were able to successfully realize that knowledge and implement it. So
whether who was able, the students?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. How do I know other than what's in the Bhagavatam? The Bhagavatam is very clear. They became devotees by hearing from Prahlad. His teachers didn't. His father didn't. They did. And the teachers, when the teachers saw that, they panicked. You know, they were in big trouble. And the whole kingdom was in big trouble because that's the future of the kingdom, is those these children. And now they become devotees of the enemy in Hiranyakashipu's perspective. They became devotees.
Thank you, Maharaj.
There's one.
Maharaj, you were saying in the beginning that the goal of spirituality, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, is to not, have pious credits and be able to enjoy and stuff. But for example, the word fruitive mentality. So the word fruitive itself, it's something that Prabhupada used. And uniquely, this understanding of fruitive mentality, I don't think it's very well understood in general. That because everyone thinks that the actions that I'm performing, I am entitled to the fruits of it.
That's right. That's materialistic consciousness.
Yeah,
and that's the standard.
Yeah. So how can we appreciate ourselves and make others appreciate that this is maybe not the best, mentality, even though it seems so
natural,
obvious. Yeah.
Well, your question is, how can we and how can we help others understand? Well, it's the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam abundantly express it through sound. I have faith in sound. For me, understanding something comes through sound. Now, sound doesn't stop, sound, when you hear it, it moves something inside. And when something moves inside, then there's some transformation. You not just feel something, but then you have a different outlook, and then you start to speak, act, and live your life according to that transformation. But it starts with sound. Receiving it properly, transformation, and then your life changes. I'll say it again. I have full faith in sound, and I don't know of another. You have to act on it. Sound is meant to be followed through on, the practical application kind of a notion. Jnana, vijnana. Prabhupada's making a distinction between these two Sanskrit words. Theoretical knowledge, and then practical application of that theoretical knowledge. You have to live it, but to live it, it has to change something inside. It has to touch something and move something and transform something inside. Otherwise, it stays out there. It's cosmetic. And cosmetic can just rub off real fast. So it has to go in. Hearing has to be of a quality that, let's say, I want to know. Oh, and I know that I don't know. But I know I want to know. And then here's this broadcasting, and I got my receiver on, and I want to know. That's how. And then when that transformation takes place, I can share that. I don't have to be Superman. I just have to be, honest of this is something that I really appreciate. And that's powerful. Okay? When there's transformation inside, you'll be able to communicate outside. Prabhupada says it like this. It doesn't even matter the language. If the house is on fire, the person will communicate in a way that others will understand the house is on fire. So if there's a sense of urgency and, not passion, but, an experience that's meaningful, can you take the child outside, please? He's a nice boy. He has a need, and the need is in silence. Okay. Anything else? I'm really hoping for some lively discussion in Dallas this evening. That's why I left some extra time. Here we go.
Thank you, Maharaj, for encouraging us to read. There are many programs that are happening around here. There are a lot of bhakti rikshas that are happening.
A lot of?
Bhakti rikshas.
Bhakti rikshas.
And there is also a chapter a day reading that His Holiness Vaisheshika Maharaj has started. So do you recommend doing anything like that? I mean, how can one systematically study this? Do you have any programs?
There's many. Find one that works for you.
Okay.
It starts with commitment.
Right.
And when there's commitment, then you find a way. But different things work for different people. You know, Become a Sage, page by page, you know that one? So some people have their reading circle and they find they can maintain it if they read together with others. So they establish a little group, a reading group. And just do it telephonically and read whatever that, you know, 20 minutes a day or read for 1 hour on Saturday morning or... And then once you're in the habit, then it's a habit. You really like it. It becomes part of your life. Or read 10 pages a day. And then I have a goal that as I read 10 pages a day, I'll complete first canto in such and such time. So I like individuality. I think it's just fantastic. So different persons have different ways that work for them. Association generally is most valuable. So find a person or persons or group of persons who are doing something that you energetically connect with or anyone here energetically connects with and participate. I know somebody that started one of those once a week and then it became 3 a week and then it became 7 a week and it was Srimad Bhagavatam this day and Chaitanya Charitamrita those days. And you know, just the energy grows. But you start with something that's doable at the beginning and do it regularly and then it grows. Now, there's some attrition at some point. Some people, circumstances of life become more difficult or something changes or something. But association. Yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj. One thing Srila Prabhupada has mentioned is this idea of when we chant the Maha Mantra, it shouldn't be heard from the lips of someone who is envious, who is someone who has any ulterior motive other than devotion to Krishna. Then you were saying...
Well, wait a minute.
I mean,
minute.
Lips as and it gives an example of...
I don't have nothing... I'm not a pure devotee. And so Prabhupada didn't teach, don't hear from, you know, the kirtan leader. You hook him up to a meter that whether he has no material desire in his heart, and then you can lead kirtan. And otherwise, you shouldn't lead kirtan. Be careful what you say.
I'll repeat what Srila Prabhupada is saying. He's saying milk touched by the lips of a serpent has
poisonous
effects.
From a Mayavadi is such hearing.
I'm more concerned about my own situation. Where,
careful. But when you use your language carefully.
So if we can complete this question. The motivation, how important is the motivation? You mentioned different levels of piety. The motivation for different individuals. And to say that my motivation is pure is a self-defeating statement.
Yeah, it's not honest.
It's not honest. It's never going to... If the result of impure chanting, if I may, is
no,
impurity.
No. Excuse me. The sound is pure. My consciousness, your consciousness, the other fellow's consciousness may not be pure. But the sound is pure. If the aspiration is, let me come in contact with that which is pure so I can become purified, that's good. Sure. If my consciousness is, I'm over here, I'm not pure. It's mixed. There's certainly some, but not unmixed. I want to become unmixed. And the sound is unmixed. Purna Shuddho. Nitya Mukto. It's fully pure. Always in the liberated position. I'm contacting that sound vibration with the hope, the prayer, the expectation, the wish to become purified. I'm not there. I wish to get there. This is the means. Krishna is very kind. He's making himself available in his fullness with all of his transcendental potencies in the sound of the holy name. And still I'm distracted. I know the philosophy. I'm still distracted.
Sorry, not a follow-up, but how does one gauge that one is going in the right direction?
Very good question. There's many answers. I mean, there's diverse ways of giving the answers. They're not different answers, exactly. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, very simple, the thirst for the impermanent is subsiding. Asat Trishna is diminishing. Not because I'm supposed to, but because it's just diminishing. That is the result. It's like when you turn the light on, darkness diminishes. It's a sign one is advancing. And then on the positive side, there's attraction for hearing. Just like, you know, there's a lot of people in the temple room now. So that they're here to, for the purpose of hearing. And the more that attraction for hearing is both quantitative and qualitative, attraction for hearing, as that increases, that's a sign that one is progressing. Another, bhakti para isha anubhav viraktir. You know the verse. I want to serve Krishna. I have a growing attraction for Krishna, Isha Anubhav, detachment from other things. That's another, it's similar, it's just other language saying something quite similar. And how that happens is through hearing. Bhakti awakens and the desire to be in service, not just, you know, keep myself busy kind of personality. I want to serve Krishna. I want Krishna should be pleased. As that Krishna should be pleased consciousness grows, that's progress. It can take a while, but that's a sign that there's progress. I just may be so much energized and passionate, I just like to keep myself busy. I like service. There's some people that like service. They don't like to chant. They're not sadhakas. They like to do some service. Fine. But a sign that one is progressing is you want to please Krishna. You want to hear and like that. All right. One last question.
Thank you, Maharaj. I think in a discussion of Vishnu Tattva a while back, you'd mentioned, you know, all the different dhams and how they've
been, different what?
This is the location of the spiritual world, how there's Vaikuntha, Ayodhya, and Goloka.
Yeah.
And how, like, in, like, for example, Narayan, Lakshmi, and Vaikuntha, and then Sitaram.
Don't lose all the people in the audience here.
Oh, sorry.
You want to have a private discussion about this? Is this? Can you say it in a way it's going to be relevant for everybody?
Yes.
Please.
So I just wanted to understand, does the gradation of the different levels of the spiritual world represent the different levels of purity or different ways of approaching Krishna, in a sense?
Question was, in the spiritual world, there's gradations of higher, higher, higher realms. Is it a higher realm of purity? No. The distinction has to do with diminished importance of opulence, increased importance of sweetness. Yes.
Can you repeat the last?
Yes, I will.
Increased
sweetness. So he's making reference to a Brahma Samhita verse. Goloka namni nijadamni tale chatasya devi maheshu hari damasu teshu teshu. So Brahma's looking up, Devi Dham above, Mahesh Dham above, Hari Dham, and the topmost of Hari Dham. Still within the realm of Haridam is Ayodhya, because there's sweetness that is not found in the rest of Vaikuntha. Well, yes, exactly. So Ram has mother and father. Narayan doesn't have mother and father. He has brothers. Narayan doesn't have brothers. He has expansions, but not brothers. There's a sweetness. And with that sweetness, loving exchange, according to that sweetness. And then in Goloka, same opulence, not diminished, less, but more sweetness. And Dwaraka, Mathura, Vrindavan, maximum sweetness. That's the distinction. Perfect, more perfect, more perfect. So, we'll end. Ready for whatever you're going to do, the wrap up. We're at 6:15.
His Holiness Ramapada Swami Maharaj Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Jai, Gaura Premanandi.